M16, number 7B.
All right, we go further to category 3 now. We come to the more warmer sense of motherhood, of love. Again, we can use that term motherhood, so that the mother becomes the hooding of the mother, the expression of mother, the constant manifestation of mother to the universe. So it's no more mother with a capital M, but motherhood, which always would show that the mother is taking care of its ideas. That is an inexhaustible motherhood. Inexhaustible. It is bringing a consummation. Can you see, consummation could not be in divine science, because consummation means that it comes to a point of fulfillment, whereas in divine science you are at the point of being fulfilled. That's why we had also that consummation of love, you remember, in the law of truth, life and love, in Absolute Christian Science, where Chandoli usually would say it is the ideal that expresses itself to the point of consummation. Truth, life, love. It is love that is no more the plan, as in category 2 at the end, we had the plan of love, but now that plan gives designs now the plan. So that each idea operates within the plan through the design of love. So we have here designs, a step-by-step execution of the divine plan. We can see that now Absolute Christian Science, by computing specific ideas, by bringing out a specific solution to a problem, designs the solution, designs the step-by-step solution, designs the unfoldment, of that solution. We had spirit as unfoldment in this category. Here now, love says to that unfoldment, I give to that unfoldment the design, I plan it out. You could also say plans it out, programs it. Love programs. Can you see, the moment you see the tonality, you begin to use quite different terms which are not in the textbook, but which are consistent with the tonality of it. It is that motherhood, that love, is goal-directed. Again, you can see this could not be put into category 1 or 2, because there is no goal. It's already everything at the point of perfection and fulfillment. But from the standpoint of Absolute Christian Science, we have a positive problem that has to be solved. And in order to solve it, love programs or designs the way of its solution. It starts right away from a beginning and has the goal in view. So it's goal-directed. It's actually like the law of spontaneity, which we had as life, truth and love, where we said it is the spontaneity of life, the impulsion of life that is always true and that is always directed to a high goal. Already there we had also love as being goal directed. Actually, if it has a goal, it has a purpose. In the level of science and divine science, we don't need to have a purpose. There is no purpose to be achieved. It is a sense of isness. It's only when we talk about a specific positive problem, which we know it's all in the realm of truth, but of which we do not yet know the solution, only then we have a purpose. We speak about the purpose, about the goal, about an aim, otherwise not. It's only here then that we see that love fulfills. I think it would be better here if you just would put fulfills, the verb, and not so much fulfillment. Actually, that fulfillment it's all right here. It's not quite divine science, because a fulfillment has still a sense that something was not, or could not, or was not fulfilled, and is brought to the point of fulfillment. But it would be much clearer if it would put in the verb, namely fulfills. Now, the level of science does not need to fulfill anything. The level of divine science does not need to fulfill anything. It's only on the level of absolute Christian science that we have a purpose, an aim that needs to be fulfilled. Well, all that is a wonderful divine and high sense of love, and then we wonder, how does it affect the human? We come to the human, where perhaps that motherhood sense, mother and motherhood sense, first gives us a feeling, comes to us as a feeling to be included, because mother includes the child, includes the idea, so therefore we feel to be included, and gives us a sense of being embraced, of being included, to be welcomed, to be accepted, to be wanted. All these wonderful qualities come to us, which have to do that we have a mother, and the mother takes care of us. It comes to us as feeling that we are blessed, because love blesses all. Can you see how these qualities here in, say, in category 4, for instance, which are qualities that we all long for, and that these qualities actually can never be realized within us out of that category. We can never get the sense that we say, well, you know, dear, you shouldn't be so depressed. You should feel that you are blessed by God. You should feel blessed. You should feel included, embraced, welcomed. You should. How should I? There is no authority that thou shalt and thou shalt not. So it shows, though we long for these qualities, in order to work them out, we should not stay in that category. We should go to the higher categories. We should always go to the origin, to the authority of it. See, what I want to bring up, because I think I didn't bring that out yet in this by doing these seven dimensions, is that if we want to demonstrate a quality or an idea that is in one of these columns, we should not stay in that column to work it out. We should go to another level, to a higher level, and draw it from there. We can only feel blessed if we first establish in our consciousness love that is God, and see, what does love mean in category 1? What does love mean in category 2? What does love mean in category 3? And fill our consciousness with that, and that automatically gives us the qualities of the fourth category. See, this has all to do with the new consciousness of getting away from an atomistic consciousness to a structural consciousness. Because when we think structurally, we always take a problem and do not analyze that problem, but put first that problem into a bigger frame of reference. That's the new consciousness, the new way of solving something. See, in the old orthodox way of a science, you had a problem about something, so you were analyzing that problem as such and trying to find a solution. The new consciousness says, no, we have a holistic consciousness, we have a structural consciousness, therefore if I have a problem at a certain point and I want to solve that problem, I do not analyze that problem. I first put it into the right reference, into the right system of reference, in a bigger frame. And I have to get used to lateral thinking. See, lateral thinking means, it's a big thing, that you are not thinking in the narrow framework of the problem that is given, but that you are first thinking lateral, that which is beside it. We could say that which is beside it, that which is on a higher level, and you put first the problem into the higher level. Then we get first a true perspective of the problem at all. This has all come out through the environment problems, through the ecological problem. Therefore, the first time the world became aware that they were misusing motherhood, that they were misusing Mother Earth, that they had no mother sense, namely not see that the child is always first in a bigger frame of reference, namely the whole, the mother, that includes all. And first see what is the problem within the whole. Terrific thing. I think one day I should take up the subject and give a few hours lecture again on it. I did it at one time, way back a few years ago. But I have seen it has never been really practiced. I always seen that in spite of all what I teach, the old way of practice is always coming in again. Here is a problem, I analyze the problem. No! Don't analyze it. First put it into the whole and look out from the whole what is the problem exactly. So if I want to produce a new instrument or something new, then I can say, oh, how can I produce it? All right, I take plastic and I take this chemical and that chemical and so on, and if I'm intelligent enough, I can do it. What is the outcome? Pollution. Pollution of the air, pollution of the water, pollution of everything, destruction of nature. Can you see? Why? Because one has not put the problem first into the big picture, into the big frame, and said, do we need it? Is it anything good? Does it destroy more than what it does good? All those questions must first be answered. And so it is with a life problem. If we just have a life problem, then look at it from that narrow little view, just be mesmerized, but just by that problem, at least the whole world would not exist, as if there would be no universe, then we certainly misdemonstrate that problem. Yeah, that was a side remark, but an important one, just to show again here that, oh yes, I want to stress that very important point. Think of it, Here you go through a wonderful sense of being included, feeling blessed, feeling holiness. And what comes here? It supports the struggling heart, it fulfills. But how on earth does it do it? Not by staying in that column, but by going to column 1 and 2 and 3. That is the solution. So, love comes to us and fulfills something. It is an impartial love that comes to us that has no recognition of people. It's a ministering love that comes and says, I want to help you. I want to care for you. I want to do that. I want to impart all good. I want to give you all and bestow you all. It all comes to meet the human needs, and I feel this love is the answer to all the human needs as an ever-present help, gives me a sense of rest and peace in my heart. That's the way love comes to me. But when we ask now, how does it get rid of the counterfeit of love, or how does it operate in the suppositional realm of the opposite, category 5, then we feel something about the power. power of love. Namely, that it is the ultimatum. Love doesn't fool around a long time. Just says, that's it. That's my demands. I don't negotiate with error. Huh? It is an ultimatum. It comes as salvation. It brings salvation. It brings us a freedom from opposite. It comes as the power of that ultimatum by enforcing really the redemption, by chastening. Can you hear now chastening? We only have chastening if there is an opposite. These are all qualities that deal with an opposite. It chastens. It comes and forgives all, and so becomes a universal solvent, which brings the final solution. It solves, see, a universal solvent. So it brings a final solution. It excludes error. That's how it deals with it. It excludes error. Makes error harmless. He says love makes the dragon harmless. It fills the vacuum. Doesn't just exclude, but it also fills it up. So it is a full compensation for everything that has gone wrong. It gives a full return for everything that has been deviating from the real. It comes to us as instantaneous healing, as protection, as comforting, so that that love says, through the exclusion of error, that love says, there is no error, there is no accuser there. Love says there is no contest. Now you come to those warm ways of dealing with error by saying, I overcome error by seeing that there is no error. Truth said, I destroy it, I annihilate it, I resolve it, I kill it, I just knock it down. Huh? It's so powerful. It's the Michael state of thought that fights with error and overcomes it. And love also overcomes it, but through a Gabriel state of thought, by saying, actually I don't have to overcome anything, because there is no error. I don't actually have no accuser. In love we have no accuser. And in love we have no contest. We do not fight. To love everything is possible. Which brings us to 6. What is now the new attitude within us, the attitude of love? I think one of the nice qualities that we have when we have touched love is that we can accept. A good Christian, theological Christian, he never can accept. He doesn't accept. He says, oh no, thank you, it's not necessary, no, you know. It always feels this is not Christian to accept something, to accept a gift, to accept something given for without working for it. A religious Christian, he always wants to work for his salvation. He wants to pay the last penny for his salvation. He wants to earn heaven. Yes. If we have a sense of true love, we don't do that. How can love be the great gift of grace when we don't accept it? And grace is without works, without merits. So it begins to build up within ourselves that gracious sense of being willing to accept happily and gratefully. So we welcome love. We begin to reflect the motherhood which we had, mother in divine science, motherhood in absolute Christian science, and now we have a mothering sense. That if we constantly contemplate what being is as mother, and as mothering, and contemplate that, we certainly build up within our sense a consciousness of that state. And so we build it up in us. Therefore, that's how reflection comes about in the human, because we are always conscious of love as mother and mothering our consciousness mothers. So we begin to feel that this is a natural state of thing to mother the universe, to mother ourselves, which we seldom do, and so builds up what we call the womanhood in us. Womanhood is a human sense of love, a human attitude of divine love. Well, what is that womanhood? We can express it as the woman sense, which is loving, peaceful, compassionate, devotion, innocence, impartial, long-suffering, forgiving, confident. It could go on and on, you see, anticipating the promise. All that is womanhood. That, what are these qualities? They are human qualities of that wonderful sense of love in number two, in category two, where love never loses sight of loveliness. If that is translated down to the human, it's the womanhood sense, because that sense is never losing sight of loveliness. Therefore, it has compassion. It doesn't fight. It has innocence, because it can't see error, it cannot think error, it cannot calculate and plan error. It is innocence, it's impartial, treats everybody the same, because the same means never lose the sight of loveliness. You really can take these womanhood qualities, and they are all the expression in the human plane of that terrific big sense of love in divine science. Love never being without its object and manifestation. Love never loses sight of loveliness. Love always being wedded to its idea. So, again, we can see that we cannot start with category six, like the religious people would do, like moral people would do. They would say, you have to be a better man, a better man. So they begin with bettering. And what do? They say, well, you must have some kind of womanhood. You must be compassionate. You must be, what do we have here? A sense of innocence, to be impartial, and you have to be long-suffering and forgiving and confident. But how? How on earth should you do it? Why should you do it? But if we see that these are the outcome of the translation from the higher level, we say, all right, before I am going to bring out this womanhood sense and mothering sense, I first want to know, is that the nature of reality? Is that really the nature of God, or isn't it? What is that nature of God as love? So I start with column 1 and column 2 and column 3. And then I have it. There's nothing to add to it. It's just how it shows itself forth on the human level. Yeah, so it comes to, it awakens in us the sense to be with the Lord, a universal sense of being universal. How can we be not universal when love never loses sight of loveliness? And it sees love everywhere. And so we too will have to see love everywhere. Even there where the seven vials full of the seven last plagues are. And see that it is an angel that presents it, and not the devil. Gosh, what a difference that makes. And then finally, we have column 7. Again, we have just some, I just had a list of some of the many, many, many counterfeits of love and love's idea. like annihilation instead of perfection, fulfillment, fear, hate instead of love, enmity instead of that universal sense of all-inclusiveness, penalty instead of the grace and the gift of God, curse and damnation instead of the blessing of love. And as a theory about love, I've taken, do you call it nihilism? Nihilism? See, it's Nietzsche's way of thinking about God. He was the first one who taught that God is dead. This is not the modern expression that you had a few years ago in this country. Nietzsche really was, that was his war cry, that God is dead. It's nihilism, that there is nothing. Huh? Instead that there is God in its fullness and its perfection, there is no God, nothing is. And everything therefore goes down the drain. And he went down the drain. He himself went down the drain. He just went out of his mind, and he was a poor creature in his older years. That's how we have here the categories. Now, you could take these seven charts here of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, and also deal with it in another way. You could deal with it by saying, I would like to know what mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love are in its core. So what would you do? You would go through the first category of mind, first category of spirit, first category of soul, principle, life, truth, and love, and you will build up, say, the core, the simple core of the seven synonymous term. And so you could take category two and just go through the seven synonymous term, and so through the third. And in this way, culture again the tonality of the dimensional sense of the seven synonymous term. That's it. That's it.